Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of BitNote. We are on location at the Science Gallery in Trinity College Dublin, just off of Pier Street, and we will be looking at Game, the Future of Play exhibition. So Game, the Future of Play, is an exhibition that's currently located in the Science Gallery on Pier Street in the centre of Dublin. It deals with game technology, and I should let you know I'm a little late with this whole episode reporting on it because it finishes up on the 20th of January 2013. So by the time this episode broadcasts, you have less than 2 weeks if you want to check out this exhibition. So I'd suggest you hurry. So what exactly is this exhibition about? Well, right here I've got Vicky Twomey Lee, who is the game researcher for this exhibition, and I'll be talking to her about this exhibition and what the whole idea is. So, hey again, Vicky.
Oh, thank you for letting me join you and showing you around and talk about this exhibition here at the Science Gallery.
Of course, I've interviewed you before in a previous episode.
Yeah, a little thing called Gamecraft, I think.
Gamecraft was a lot of fun with all us making the games. So obviously, with a title like Game, the Future of Play, we're thinking about video games. But what exactly was the main goal behind this exhibition?
So that whole area of the arts is just as important as the whole tech side, as the science side, the engineering side. So the whole goal of this was get the young people into the gallery and exhibition, get them interacting and realize how fun it is. It's not just, a lot of the exhibitions here is not just digital as well. So getting the whole concept of play and get them understanding about the design of games and also the behind the scenes. So all this is to entice young people as well as people who are studying right up to professionals who come in.
But I mean, like, a lot of kids do play a lot of games, though. It's very popular.
They're interested in games, but would they go into the whole area of games?
Okay, that's great. I mean, using games as a way of getting people interested in the industry in both the creative aspects and the programming aspects.
And also highlight the Irish indie industry as well.
And of course you mentioned Coder Dojo as well. I mean, that's a great effort. That's a bunch of volunteers all across the country helping young people how to code and program, often video games and stuff. So Vicky Twomey Lee, what exactly is your role in this exhibition?
I'm the actual game researcher for the exhibition, so my goal is to find all the interesting stuff that's happening that's game related. And basically contact the people and see if they're interested in exhibiting here at Science Gallery. And then the team here has been fantastic. They were in charge of bringing the folks here logistically and doing the paperwork. And I just, all I had to do was just send a few emails, you know, have a lot of meetings. But other than that, you know, it's been a lot of fun, a lot of reading, a lot of watching videos. It's a hard life being a researcher.
All right. Okay. Thanks. Well, I think we better start taking a look around some of the exhibits.
Yeah.
All right, so one of the first exhibitions you see as you come in the entrance is this exhibition called Interference, and what it basically looks like is a bunch of silver sheets hanging vertically with space to walk between them, and a lot of cork pegs you can stick into holes between in the sheets. So, Vicky, what exactly is this about?
This piece, this beautiful sculptural piece, is by Eric Zimmerman and Natalie Pozzi, and Eric is a game designer and Natalie is an Italian architect. And as these sheets represent a cell, an organism, right. And all these corks, these red and white corks, represent two different sides. So what you do is you take a black cork piece, you start off in a cell colony, and you pick a color, you and an opponent pick a color. So I say you're red and I'm white, and if there's two white in a colony, say if there's two white pieces and one red piece, then I actually colonize that cell.
Okay.
So what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to find another set of people playing another game in another sheet, and take cells from them. You can't take cells from your own game, and you're interfering with their game to actually try and win and colonize the cell. So as you move through each cell and colonize, the whole game is to win, get as many pieces and colonize as many cells than your opponent. So what you're doing is the other people will come along and take your cell, your little corks as well, and basically they're interfering with your game. It gets minimum four players to play this game, but obviously as many players as can possibly fit, and it goes bonkers and mad.
So that's very clever. So basically it's a game about how you playing a game with someone can interfere in another game played by someone else.
Exactly.
Opposite the interference, just as you come in, there's another quite visually grabbing exhibition called Game Arthritis. It's a set of colour photographs. Each of the posters shows one person on one side using a video game peripheral, and on the other side, them showing some injury or disfigurement, which is implied to have been caused by using this video game peripheral. Some of the photographs they show are kind of shocking and twisted, showing a lot of injuries or deformities allegedly caused by these game controllers, and it kind of set me into a spin of, wait a second, this can't be true, can it? And I mean, like, if I look at it, well, apparently one of the guys has still used an Atari joystick enough to get injured by it, so that kind of implies that maybe this doesn't have the most amount of truth behind it, and even the wording is a little tricky. So, I mean, Vicky, is these images, they're not real, are they?
I hope they're not. It is quite scary when I first came across this in part of the open calls. And
you see, like, swollen hands and fingers and stuff.
Yeah, especially when I've been playing games since God knows when I was, like, really tight kind of girl, kind of when my dad got us our first Famicom back in 1984. But you hear about maybe RSI, you maybe hear about, oh, don't sit too close to the TV, or you might need to get glasses, which doesn't matter because I wear glasses anyway, from all the studying, in quotes. But to me, it's more as in a sensational piece. It's to highlight the problems of gaming too much and not taking enough breaks.
Well, yeah, like you said with RSA, sometimes a repetitive action can cause a bit of injury, and maybe looking at an illuminated screen in a dark room isn't the best, but it's just this is like a huge exaggeration. This is, as you said, a bit sensationalism, and I mean, like, in one case the woman isn't even holding a video game peripheral, it's just a pair of those 3D glasses, you know, with the blue tint and the red tint.
Well, guess what? It worked. It got people stopping and looking and wondering what it is and what's going on, and they're talking about it, and it worked. And it got you talking.
Well, like, you got me there. Let's move on. And this exhibition is the Outer Body Maze. Now, I actually played this, and I was pretty damn good at it. What's happened is essentially you've got a simple maze pattern on the floor, and you're to walk around this maze. You know, it's just a pattern. You're going to walk around it from like 1, 2, 3, and 4 various parts of the maze. But the trick is you're wearing a pair of goggles, and those pair of goggles are broadcasting an image from a camera that's positioned diagonally across from the and above from the maze. So it's basically you're looking at the maze and yourself in the maze from a third-person perspective, basically like an isometric perspective, and you still have to, looking at this out-of-body viewpoint, still have to walk around the maze.
Yeah, it is. It's quite a simple maze, but wearing a goggles and actually seeing yourself in third person, it is quite disorientating, and it is quite fun as well, especially at the moment there's one kid playing, but if you have two players playing, it can get very competitive. There can be a bit of cooperation, but in the end, people are just pushing each other out of the way to win the maze, and it's quite a lot of fun.
It's a very clever idea, and
it's simple and clever, and plus, you know, your brain doesn't really work where your legs want to go. It's quite fun to watch, and you can be very distracted watching someone play this.
Okay. So the next exhibition is Lunar Trails, which is basically a variant of Lunar Lander. Now, the objective of Lunar Lander is basically to land Lunar Lander on the moon. And you can rotate the craft and apply a thrust. But the tricky thing is to make sure, first of all, that you land on a flat surface. Second of all, that you land on it slow enough so that you don't crash and cause a crater. And third of all, to make sure that you're not spinning, you know, too fast laterally across the surface of the moon to trip you all up. Now, this thing, Lunar Trails, is a variant on the Lunar Lander in that everyone who plays a game of this has the route that they took from the starting point to the moon surface mapped out both on both a computer screen and also a chalkboard. There is actually a little robot that applies chalk to the chalkboard that draws out the route that their Lunar Lander is taking. And over time, a great big pattern is built up over all the alternative routes down to the surface combined. So, Vicky, who came up with this?
It's basically by a game designer called Seb Delisle, and he initially created this in JavaScript. I think he might have ported this to HTML5. That's how I actually found the guy in the first place. I was looking for HTML5 game coder. And basically he loved, as you can see, he loved Lunar Lander. That's why he ported a game. And he basically when he put it on embedded on his website, when lots of people were playing it, he caught all the coordinates, and he decided to basically see what it looks like, and he saw there's all these beautiful trails. And by the time I contacted him and said, "Oh, I want to actually do a huge version. I want to actually get a plotter and actually draw the trails." So this is how this concept basically came to life at the game exhibition. As you can see, it's actually not chalk; it's actually a white marker, and it's drawn on black paper. And it's basically quite wonderful, you know, having this machine. This was custom made by an engineer and himself, and it's just basically on a string, and it's just nice to watch it going back and forth as well. It's very kind of
therapeutic.
Unfortunately, in any technical exhibition, not every exhibition is going to work the whole time, and I think we seem to have one example here with We the Resistance. So in lieu of actually trying this out, Vicky, could you let me know what this exactly is about?
We the Resistance is it's like a game that you're played in science gallery. It's like a meta game, so you game within game. What people do is they come along and to the gallery, and they basically get a picture taken of themselves and probably have a Twitter handle as well. And you're actually just joined the resistance. And what your whole sole goal is to pass messages out after given an RFID card. You have to find these black boxes around the gallery, and every time you swipe, and the message gets passed out. So it's not as simple as it seems, because there are people called watchmen, which are actually the mediators dressed in black t-shirts around the gallery. They might be guarding, or you might try to get them to show you where these boxes are. And if they catch you, they'll negate your message. They'll take. So every time you pass a message out, or every time you get caught, it gets sent to a display here down in the science gallery. So you can say, "Oh, you passed the message out, or you've been caught." And there's about three or four of them around the gallery, and their positions change a couple of times. So they're never in the same place. So you could be under a table, it could be anywhere. So you get people, if you see people, you know, upside down somewhere, they're looking for something, and that's the reason why.
And another broken exhibition, unfortunately. I recall the art for this. It showed a baby in a gigantic robot with a great fist coming out of it. What exactly is it?
It's called Bionic Rochambeau, and it's by a guy called Kieran Nolan. And he's an Irish. I think he's a game designer. He's a researcher as well. Especially interested in whole gaming devices and how you interact with games. And this actually is a prototype where there's normally a pair of gloves. So one person wear a pair of gloves, and there's kind of magnets in between the fingers. And what happens if you do scissors, or you do
rock paper scissors?
It goes the countdown, and you basically do a Rochambeau, and then see who wins.
Those are a great selection of exhibits. We now go upstairs to see a few more. So, one of the first exhibitions we see when we get up is the Angry Birds exhibition, and I don't see any of the cute little cartoon birds anywhere. Instead, what I see is a great big grid of cards. They're very small cards, largely white, in a great grid, and each card has this black smudge on it, or a couple of black smudges. So, Vicky, what exactly is this?
Well, this visual piece is actually how to finish Angry Birds, showing you with each finger swipe. So each of those smudges is actually a finger swipe on how, when you pull a bird back and let go. So what he's showing you is how over the last five years ago, we wouldn't have known how to swipe, you know, on a phone, the smartphones. Nowadays, people are intuitively swiping and playing games, and this is a very repetitive, you can notice it's all repetitive, kind of a set of gestures, and that's the whole premise of his artwork as well. It's all about repetitiveness.
Okay. So is this like a complete game of Angry Birds? Is the first card like the first level, the second?
That's what he says on the open call when he submitted it, and there's 315 of these thumb swipes.
Alright, so another exhibition, How to Baby Castles, which apparently is a bunch of great big cuddly animals that basically seem to have computers integrated into them. And the integration was sort of like done by a bunch of game developers, right?
Well, game developers or enthusiasts or people who love playing indie games, and just wondering what you mean by ripping a bear apart and using a load of duct tape and maybe some sewing involved, and embedding a machine and make a bear arcade. exhibition. Why not be curious about that? I was involved in it as well. I just thought, oh yeah, let's try this. And I managed to do my first solder. Got to rip apart a bear innards and also mess around with a netbook.
Cool. And it's fun. It's got two games running on them at the moment. One of them is Super Crate Box, which I'll probably look into more. And the other is Every Day It's the Same Dream, which I'll talk about on another show. They deserve a little more time to themselves to talk about. Okay. And over here is the gaming design studio, which you've been involved with. Tell us a bit about that.
Basically, this is basically a few computers for people who want to create a simple game and learn how to create one. And there's lots of free applications like Scratch and Construct too. And there's a few tutorials. And people just come up to Science Gallery upstairs, sit down, turn on a computer, or just sit there on a computer and just make your own game. And if you don't understand them, there's a few mediators around to help you along as well.
That's brilliant. So this isn't just about showing people and people absorbing stuff. This is about encouraging people to actually create as well, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not just for young people, it's for adults as well. So, and it also shows you that you don't have to spend a lot of money to download these fancy applications to make games. There's a lot of free ones out there and very simple to use. And it gets you started as well. If you're interested in making games, try these out. And then if you want to go advance more, there's more intermediate and advanced applications to download and try.
Cool. So that sounds great. So just to, if anyone's interested, the programs were Scratch and Construct 2. All right, also on the top floor, I think, is one of the more fun exhibits, Re-Pong. Now, I think most of us are familiar with Pong. Basically, there's two paddles, one on the left, one on the right of the screen. A ball bounces between the two, and there are two players, each of which has to make sure that when the ball is heading towards them, that it hits their paddle rather than misses their paddle. So it's kind of like table tennis in a way, but just moving back and forth these little paddles. What Re-Pong does is take the simple basic concept and reinterpret it in numerous different ways. So one of the fun things is what they've done is, obviously it's still a two-player, and they've got these wooden, great big like levers that you move back and forth to move the panel, but they've put a great big chest expander sort springs between the two wooden panels, so that when you're trying to move your paddle, your opponent can move their paddle and try to like spring your paddle off. So this is basically a version of Pong where your opponent can actually interfere with your ability to move the paddle back and forth. And then of course when you hit the ball back, then you can just move your thing up and down and get the springs acting on their wooden lever so that they're interfered with their shot. So I was just playing with Vicky here, and I think we had a lot of fun with this. It's a very clever idea, because traditionally with Pong you hit the ball backwards and then it's a waiting game, you depend what the opponent does, but with all these springs back and forth, now you actually have an active part to play in trying to put off your opponent's shot. Another version of Re-Pong is done similarly, only with basically spirit level. So it's kind of like you hold this wooden chunk to horizontally, and then you tilt it left or right to move your paddle up and down. It's a bit of fun, and got a spirit level and everything. And another one, which you play it with microphones. So you say a deep voice like in order to move your paddle up, and a high-pitched voice like to move it down. So you actually control the paddles just using your voice. And I think one of my favorite ones in this part is this exhibition in the center. And the Re-Pong exhibition is like a raised barrier, and on one side are two buttons for controlling each paddle, and on the other side is basically the screen. So what happens, it's best played with four players, is that the person who sees the screen gives instructions to the person on the other side of whether to move up and down, and that moves their paddle up and down. So the guy looking at the screen has to provide feedback to the person who's actually controlling the paddle to move the paddle, and meanwhile the person who's moving the paddle has to, you know, press the buttons corresponding to the instructions. And basically it's a great bit of cooperation, because you've got to constantly give the other person instructions in order to try to win the game. And like I said, it's best played with four players, where two teams of two, where one is working with the others. Anyway, and no matter which variant of this Pong you try, it's a lot of fun. So the next exhibition we have is Granny's Backyard by Tim Garbus. Now this is actually a really fun little one. We've got a great big screen that shows all these like retro sort of pixel art stuff, and on the surface in front of me, we've got obviously a little joystick that controls the character. But we've also got a bunch of wooden cubes and a surface containing a lot of little lights. And what happens is when you put the wooden cubes in somewhere in this grid of lights, you actually affect the actual gameplay and the actual scenery of the level that you see in front of you. You've got three color ones, green, blue, and red. Red, when you put red down, it suddenly makes a block of earth appear there. When you put blue, it's water. And when you put green, it's vegetation of some sort. And it's really clever. Like, if you put like two blocks, if you put a green block over a red block, it has a palm tree. But if you put three blocks in a vertical thing, it has a really tall palm tree. If you put a blue block in the air, it's a cloud. But if you put a blue block between two red blocks, it becomes a lake. And if you put a blue block above a bit of a red block, then it becomes a water spout coming out of the ground. And it's even a lot of fun as well. If you put a green block under a blue block, it becomes seaweed. But if you put a green block over a blue block, then it becomes a water lily on the surface of the water. So it's just really, really clever, all the different ways that all these different combinations of putting the blocks together to create all these different levels. And in the meantime, we look at the map and we see how it changes from day to light and all these bright, colorful graphics. And meanwhile, you're moving around the blocks. And of course, once you've constructed this nice little world of all the blocks, you can move your character around and jump and climb trees and go flying up water spouts. So it's just all really interactive, got really immediate feedback, and it's all just a very fun, bright, colorful, and creative game. Okay, I think what we're going to do is talk about, I think, my favorite game exhibition now, Game Border. This is a very, very clever whole exhibition thing. When you look at it first, you see a bunch of screens and TV screens and consoles arranged in a line, you know, embedded on the wall in a line from left to right, and it all starts very clearly. What happens is, on the very first screen to the furthest to the left, it's a simple game and watch game, you know, those classic LCD games made by Nintendo, when you basically press left and right and this platform appears, and a little character in a hat just moves gradually from the left and right. You just have to press the left and right buttons to make sure that a platform is in the gap so that the player manages to make it from the left side of the screen to the right side of the screen without falling into gaps. But here's where the thing begins. Once the character moves out of the right side of the game and watch screen, he suddenly moves into the screen that's right into the left side of the screen that's right beside it. And this one seems to be kind of like a bright, colorful, like Mario-style platform game. And so suddenly, your character, which was in the game and watch, is now in a completely different platform, in a completely different game. And he's moving from left to right, and you have to grab the gamepad and press jump and jump. And so he jumps over the pipe and he jumps over the blocks, and then he manages to make it to the right of the screen, but he moves on to the next one, which is suddenly basically pilot wings. He runs along and jumps, and you have to pick up the Super Nintendo controller and press the button at the right time so his parachute opens so he lands safely. And then when he lands, he walks across the bottom of the screen and moves into suddenly what looks like a basic 3D fighter game. So as you can see, the character is moving from one screen to the next and to the next, from left to right, and every time it ends the right side of one screen, it appears on the left screen of the screen beside it. So you're actually playing this game character as it transitions from one game to the other through the eras, and all the games he travels through is kind of like a summary history of the history of game development, which makes it all the cooler. Now, there is a Game Boy which isn't working yet, but of course, like I said, we've got the 3D fighting game that's done with a Sega Saturn control pad that's kind of aimed to be like Virtua Fighter, and then we've got it moves into a Silent Hill sort of game. Like, some kids were playing it earlier saying Silent Hill, but this is like the classic controls where you have to press left and right to rotate the person, and you basically have to make it through this 3D area and get into a game to escape. And then you've got one game that's like a generic bright, colorful Nintendo DS game, and then there's another. Then once you jump up the top of the Nintendo DS game, you're in it placed in a PSP game that's kind of like Loco Roco, where you have to rotate the screen in order to roll it in. And then you've got a 3D beach volley game, and it all finishes up using a Kinect version that's like a very, where you have to use great big hand gestures in order to move this floating platform and in order to fill it to two gaps, which is almost exactly like the same thing, which is a callback to the original Game & Watch game, where you basically had two gaps, which at first you filled by pressing buttons, and in the final game you fill the gaps by basically using arm gestures in order to move the platform into the gaps. So it's just a really awesome exhibit, kind of like a brief history of video games in one way, because we get to see a character move through all these games, but also really cool idea. So yeah, Game Border, definitely cool. So we've got another exhibition here, which is Relax and Race, where essentially there are these monitors that are put on your fingers, I believe, and they are two dragons that race across the landscape, and in order to get your dragon to go the fastest and win the race, you have to relax more than anyone else. So this is basically relax to win. Kind of fun idea. I tried it earlier and I didn't do too badly. But it's always tricky because if you're falling behind, you get stressed and go, no, I'm falling behind. Then you stress, and of course that makes you relax less, so you lose more. And clearly, if you're relaxed enough that you start winning, you suddenly get excited and going, yes, I'm winning. But then of course that is excitement, which is less relaxed, so you start losing again. So it really is quite a challenge in order to keep your dragon ahead and in the lead. But some people obviously are better at it than others. And I think the idea is that, like with games like this, you'll be able to train yourself to relax more on command, and the more you get better at relaxing, the more calmer you'll be and better able to deal with the world around you. The next exhibition is pretty cool as well. Basically, we've got this great big scary ogre standing around, and the idea is if you stand in front of the X in front of it, it'll actually pick up your movements and it'll basically mirror your actions, which is cool. But the real focus is meant to be on basic physics simulation. So for instance, the ogre is wearing all these tattered clothing, and he's also got a great big bulky belly. So the idea is that the belly and the clothing and a few bit of floppy skin all moves dynamically according to how you move it around, you know? We've got Doodle Defense, which is unfortunately yet another game that's not quite working, but the idea is you're actually meant to draw on this whiteboard with a marker exactly what the actions of the game is meant to be. We've also got Kinect to Scratch here. Yes, yet again it's Pong, and this time it picks us up your body movements using Kinect. By the way, I mentioned Kinect a few times in this exhibition. Essentially, it's a sensor developed by Microsoft that basically faces you and is able to pick up your gestures and body postures and movements. So the idea is you're able to control the game or the environment through your body movements and actual physical interaction rather than just through a controller. Kinect to Scratch is basically a way of quickly developing these sort of games, even by people who aren't that familiar with programming. Kinect Scratch, I believe, was developed by Stephen Howell, and it's a great idea. Just like this earlier stuff I talked about, like Scratch Construct 2, it's making it easier to get involved in game development. And so I think the last exhibition we're talking about is Generations. Now the idea is, can you have a video game that you actually won't be able to complete in your lifetime so that you pass on to your descendants so they'll keep playing the game, and then their descendants will keep playing the game? You know, I actually really like the idea of something like that. I think the idea of just having a game or progress that has been built up over the generations and continued on is a great idea and very heritage inspiring. But unfortunately, I can't really evaluate whether this particular game fills that criteria, because right now apparently what it's doing is going back over the blocks that have all... It's basically a thing where you build blocks one on top of the other, building a great big tower, but apparently right now I can't interact with it because it's slowly scrolling back over all the tower it's been built and completely is non-interactive in any way. Either way, I think the idea, which apparently I'm going to have to take for granted that this game encompasses, is actually a very decent one, and also I think we'll probably see more of these sort of games, though maybe not in a format exactly like these. And so one other exhibition, My Life Walkthrough. Essentially, My Life Walkthrough is like a digital version of My Life Books, which is often done in nursing homes. The idea is that because with people with dementia or other mental conditions, they might be able to remember their early life pretty well, but not recent stuff. So with the idea with the life book, or this digital version, is to help them, you know, build up, you know, an autobiography of their life in order to help them remember what their whole life is. So this is a great example of a video game being used to actually really help people, to actually, you know, challenge them and help them in remembering stuff and understanding the world a lot better and helping them remember things better. And that's always a great idea. So, as we're heading out, I think that's been a great trip to Game the Future of Play exhibition.
Yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed it. It was definitely nice to be able to play all the games again, and given that I'm actually now a participant instead of an actual researcher and working with Science Gallery, so it was nice to be able to play with someone else instead of just me and the Science Gallery staff.
Yeah, indeed it is. It's just, I mean, it provides so many different ways of thinking about games. to show so many different ways games are being used, and a lot of things that are just plain fun. So it's a really great exhibition.
I hope that the game exhibition has achieved that, and I hope you really enjoyed the couple hours we had here, because definitely 2 hours mightn't be enough at all if you want to thoroughly play with all the exhibits, and bring a few friends as well, because and also you don't understand something, there's a staff here happy to help and explain everything as well. So do come along, and it's only for a couple of more weeks. So if they're touring, go check it out in other cities as well.
Okay. And just a reminder, the game exhibition ends on the 20th of January 2013, which is basically about 2 weeks from broadcast date. It's the Science Gallery, Pierce Street in central Dublin. If you picked up this episode in the future and the game has already ended before you even listened to this episode, then I'm really, really sorry. But I hope that by listening to the show you got some glimpse of what this exhibition was like, and maybe you'll see some other implementations of some of these exhibitions somewhere in the world in the future. Well, Vicky Twomey Lee, it's been a pleasure with you. Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And this has been BitNote with David Collins. Thank you for listening.